light reads, heavy reads, everything in between. We're talking books. What a pleasure to have Petra Mayer of NPR Books on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's an annual tradition by now. NPR Books drops a motherload of options through its book concierge. If you haven't experienced it, it's this gorgeous visual matrix of hundreds of favorite titles of the year. It's sortable with memorable interviews attached to the book selections. We have a link at WPR.org/mornings. Let's hear it. What are you reading? What books have sustained you in the pandemic? It's 800-642-1234. Petra Mayer is an editor at NPR Books, focusing on fiction, particularly genre fiction. Her team designed the NPR Book Concierge with nearly 400 recommendations. Petra, welcome to the Ideas Network.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
What has your relationship been like with books in the pandemic?
That's a really interesting question, right? Because, you know, you think that, you know, you're trapped at home, there's so much going on outside, there's so much to deal with, you want to escape into a book, right? But for me, at least, for the first, I don't know, four or five months of the pandemic, I could not read. Like, my brain was broken. All I could do was just sit on the couch with my knitting, and honestly, like, I watched a lot of Food Network. It was dire. I was miserable, but I could not make myself read. I was just too scattered. And finally, and I don't know what did it, but something snapped or changed. And I truly did feel like there was cool rain falling in my head when I realized I picked up a book and read more than 5 pages and I could keep going. It was the most amazing feeling of relief. And since then, I've been reading just frantically anything I get my hands on. But I had a lot of sympathy in the beginning of the pandemic because there was so much talk about how books were escapism, and I was thinking, well, what about people who can't read at all right now? You know, have some pity on us.
Yeah, yeah. What are you currently reading?
Well, as often happens when I have a ton of books to catch up on for work, I read something I missed that came out 10 years ago. you know how it is. I've got to read 5 new books, so instead I'm going to read a massive fantasy series that came out in the 90s. I'm reading a book by Bill Bryson called At Home, which came out about 10 years ago. And this is actually great right now for people who are stuck in their own homes. It is this fabulously detailed, digressive history of every room in the house and sort of how they developed over the centuries. It is sort of British specific because he was living in England at the time, and so he's talking about his own house, which is this, I think it's a Victorian era vicarage, but he just goes through it from every inch of it, from sort of top to bottom, starting in the front hallway, you know, which of course has changed hugely from the days when people were living most of their lives in these big drafty halls around, you know, smoky open hearths with all the animals in there. You know, now it's just where you come in the door and hang up your coat. So for each room, he digs into sort of not just the history of the space, but also the technologies that contribute to that space, like fuse boxes and telephones and cast iron and printed wallpaper. So I'm right in the middle of that, and it's really interesting.
I suppose it makes you look at your own space differently as we spend so much more time at home.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm a history nerd, so I love sort of learning about everything that goes into the way that I move through this space. The other thing also, I read a lot of advanced copies, so I've got a lot of those on my Kindle right now, and I feel sometimes guilty about talking about them because mm-hmm. I'm reading these books that other people can't get their hands on, which I sort of jokingly call ARC privilege. But that's what I have a lot of right now, and the one that I'm the most excited for, and I cannot wait to dig into, is called The Beautiful Ones by Silvia Moreno Garcia. She wrote Mexican Gothic, which is in the concierge. I think it was one of my picks because it was definitely one of my favorite books last year. If you haven't read it, go read it. It's a great sporty Gothic horror novel set in Mexico in the 1950s. This time around, she's doing like almost a romance set in a kind of alternate Belle Epoque fantasy world where people have telekinesis, apparently. I can't wait. It looks great.
Oh, my goodness. We are talking this hour about books, books of all kinds, with Petra Mayer, editor at NPR Books. How do you decide which books to read? What makes you interested in a particular book? Maybe you've gotten into audiobooks recently. What are you listening to? What are some of your favorite authors and what do you like about their writing? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. You can also check out, if you will, the Book Concierge. It has nearly 400 book recommendations from 2020. We're talking with Petra Mayer about those recommendations. She's an editor at NPR Books, and she's fielding your questions about the books that you love to read, the books that you've been reading now. 800-642-1234. Petra, I think we have you on a better connection now. Thanks for switching to phone.
Sure, no problem. Can you hear me better now?
We can hear you better now. You had given us one book recommendation, and I want to make sure that we can all hear what you were talking about.
Oh, sure. Was that The Beautiful Ones by Silvia Moreno Garcia?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So if you didn't hear me talk about that, stop me if you've heard this before. This is the new book by the author of Mexican Gothic, which was one of my favorite books of last year, which is a great Gothic horror novel set in Mexico in the 1950s. That was a concierge pick. You should definitely read it. Even if you're a horror wuss, it's still really good. So this time around, this is she's doing romance. Of course, everybody wants to read romance right now. And it's set in a kind of alternate Belle Epoque fantasy world where people have telekinesis, and this young, awkward girl from the country who's trying to control her own powers comes to town for her debut season. Anyways, it looks great. I can't wait to read it.
How do you put together your selections for the Book Concierge? I mean, these are hundreds of titles. How do you arrive at them?
So we start working in September, which is sort of coincidentally when people start asking me about it. and we have it sort of down to a science at this point because we've been doing it for so long. But we put out the word to all of our freelance reviewers and then also a lot of people in-house. Perennially, staff picks is like the most popular part of the concierge. People really want to know what, you know, Ari Shapiro is reading. And so they come back to us and we say, you know, just tell us, nominate as many books as you loved from this year. And then they come back to us and we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of possibilities. And basically, you know, the four of us who work on it lock ourselves in a room for hours on end, although this year it was just a lot of Zoom calls. and we go through every single title one by one and we argue about them. And we try to, from all of those picks and the things that we ourselves want to be in there, create a well-curated and balanced list. So that's basically how it works. A lot of long calls.
A lot of long calls. And even though if you're not able to read a book, you have to either argue in favor or against it.
Yeah, well, between the four of us, most people, you know, we have enough expertise that everybody's going to be able to speak up for a book.
Yeah.
A lot of times something will come up and we'll say, well, none of us have heard of this. And then we look it up and look at, you know, critical responses and see what, you know, what people are saying about the book. And then we decide. But often if nobody's heard of it, it doesn't end up in the concierge. But I should say, like, the concierge it's not just books that everybody knows. Like, one of the things that I love the most about it is that it's a way for me to discover things I missed throughout the year. So we hope that it will be a discovery tool for everyone, because it certainly is for us.
How have book sales looked like in the pandemic?
Surprisingly good. Like, you wonder whether people have money to spend on books, but apparently they do. So just a caveat, I only have print figures for this because ebook sales are tabulated differently and those numbers aren't out yet. But so according to NPD BookScan, which tracks all this stuff, as of the day after Christmas, sales were up more than 8% over the same time in 2019. And they think that once they have all the numbers, it's going to be the best year for book sales since they started tracking, which was, I think, in 2004.
Wow.
I can break that down if you want more specifics, but basically it was a really good year for book sales.
Petra Mayer, self-proclaimed NPR book nerd. Her real title is an editor of NPR Books. She's taking us through her memorable reads with your suggestions as well. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Petra Mayer here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the wide world of books here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have, as our guide, Petra Mayer, editor at NPR Books, looking back at 2020, the pandemic, and the movement for social justice and confronting racism led to changes in publishing. In recapping the year, Publishers Weekly said the surge in demand for books about race revealed what Black booksellers have told publishers for years. There simply are not enough books in print or titles available to meet the needs of readers who are not white. What book opened your eyes to a new way of thinking, a new world for you? 800-642-1234. And Petra Mayer is with us for the hour. Petra, let's talk about Interior Chinatown and Charles Yu, who just received the National Book Award in Fiction Writing. Can you hear us, Petra?
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
I had tried to switch to a headset to see if that would help, but apparently it didn't. So Interior Chinatown. Yeah, this was such a cool surprise. You know, nobody really thought it was going to win the National Book Award. We all thought that was going to go to Shuggy Bain, which is also great. And it won the Booker the next day. So it was such a cool surprise when this won. It is a surreal, funny, often quite painful satire on the stereotypes that that affect Asian American lives. Our hero is Willis Wu. He's a struggling actor, and he's sort of never really gotten beyond playing, quote, a generic Asian man in the background of this terrible cop show. And all he wants to be is a kung fu guy, which he thinks of as sort of the pinnacle of achievement for guys like him. And you think at the start that this is like an actual actor talking about an actual career, and it is to a certain extent, mm-hmm. but Yu sort of expands it, and he makes it this metaphor for Asian American life. So like everybody Willis knows lives in this vast, chaotic apartment complex, which is, as far as I can tell, that's the interior Chinatown that we're talking about in the title. And it sits on top of a very stereotypical Chinese restaurant. And all of the people in Willis's lives either work in this restaurant or in this kind of Hollywoodish industry where they play roles like pretty oriental flower or egg roll cook. And they live their lives according to these unspoken Hollywood rules about what parts you get and how you play them. In an odd way, it's almost like a kung fu movie where, you know, if you've ever watched one, you know that in those movies, kung fu is just something everybody knows, and it's part of the fabric of life, and it's just expected that that's, you're going to live your life knowing about this and according to these rules. And in the same way, these sort of odd Hollywood rules about casting and roles and how you play them governs everybody's life. And, you know, Willis falls in love, and he becomes a kung fu guy, but, it's, you know, he finds out that that's not really what he wants, and it kind of expands out from there. It's a really great book.
Yeah, Charles, you were saying he was so excited to tell the story of an interior life of someone who normally doesn't get that kind of treatment in books, on the screen, or elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about, you've probably seen a show, the cop show in the book is called Black and White, and it's made up, but you've probably seen something like that, and you've probably wondered, you know, that guy in the background who, you know, he's playing a corpse, or he's, you know, playing the guy who just appears to give the heroes a hint about where they need to go next. What's going on in his head? So that's what's happening in this book. We're really digging into the interior life of one of those people.
We're talking with Petra Mayer, our guide to finding the best books to read. She works as an editor at NPR Books, focusing on fiction works, taking your suggestions as well. 800-642-1234. Marcus is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus. What are you reading? Hi, Marcus. Are you there?
Yeah. Good morning. Hi.
Good morning. Hi. Go ahead.
I've actually been turning back to like more classic literature from Americana, and so I've actually been reading books from the 30s. I love The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, Of Mice and Men, and I don't know if it's just the, you know, kind of the feel of the times that we're in, and it's, you know, but then on the opposite side of that, I've also been trying to read other stuff to stay positive. I'm a Christian, so I read the Bible, but then I've also been turning to other like religious texts, such as the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, just for some like more Zen Buddhist philosophy.
Marcus, thank you for that. Well, first, starting with classics like The Great Gatsby and Of Mice and Men.
Well, it's really interesting that Marcus mentions Gatsby, because that actually just came into the public domain. January 1st is Public Domain Day, when works from 95 years ago become accessible to the public. And so this year, so we're starting to get all the great stuff from the early and mid-20s, and this year Gatsby was one of the books. So that means people are free to sort of remix and rework it. And one of the books that's actually coming out this month, it may already be out, is Nick by Michael Ferris Smith, which sort of reimagines the life of Nick, the character in Gatsby, and what his life was like before he met Jay Gatsby. And I spoke to him actually briefly about this because I did a story on Public Domain Day. And he talked about sort of, you know, he'd written the book 5 years ago, but it couldn't come out until now because of the copyright issues. And he was happy that it could come out now because it had all these parallels to the world now. You know, Nick Gatsby is set in the 20s after, you know, the Spanish flu pandemic. So there's a lot of parallels between the upheavals that are going on in that book and what's going on now in the real world. So I think, you know, reading classics has a lot to tell us right now.
On your list is Ray Bear by Jordan Ifueco. What do you see in Ray Bear?
This is one of my favorite books last year. So, you know, as I said earlier, right, the concierge is a discovery tool for me, too, when I'm working on it. And, you know, every year there's something that falls through the cracks that I miss, that I sleep on until I see everybody on my Twitter feed is talking about it. And that was Ray Bearer this year. So this is a great new fantasy novel by a debut Nigerian-American author. It is part of this big wave that's actually happening right now of African-influenced sci-fi and fantasy. So it's about a young girl, and she's raised in isolation by these very strict tutors, and her mother is very mysterious. She's only called the lady. She appears briefly every now and then to check in, and then she disappears again. So all this young girl wants is the love of a family and friends. But she's being trained to go to the capital city and compete to become part of the Crown Prince's Council. So she goes to the capital and she competes and she becomes part of the council. And these people will all be linked by a magical force called the Ray, hence the title. But before she goes, her mother puts a compulsion on her. She has to gain the prince's love and then she has to kill him. So there's this amazing conflict. Here she is. She's in the capital. She's finding a new life and her friends and this love of a group of a chosen family that she's always wanted. And she's coming into her power and she's having to deal with this compulsion and also her need for her mother's love. And her mother is kind of the big bad of the story. But as in the very best fantasy and in general, books in general, the villain isn't just, "Ooh, I'm evil." Her mom has a story that we're really, you know, punch you right in the feelings. And the world building is amazing. It's very influenced by African mythology. It's colorful. It's lush. It's fresh. It's so good. Just read it. You'll thank me.
And character development as well, how she crafts her characters is also mesmerizing.
Yeah. I mean, this is a true ensemble piece. A lot of hero, you know, a lot of fantasy is so much about the hero's journey. But when Tarisai, that's her name, when she gets to the capital and she meets the prince and she meets the other kids and she kind of grows up with them, this group coalesces around her and all of them are compelling. They're all multidimensional. They're not just props on her journey. And that's a real trick to pull off.
Let's talk about The Space Between Worlds, Makaya Johnson.
Yeah, this is a really interesting sci-fi novel. It's about a dystopian far future Earth where you can travel between multiverses. But there's a catch, right? You can only go to a universe where the version of you that existed in that universe is already dead. Otherwise, terrible stuff will happen. So that creates this dichotomy, like the people who live in the cushy walled cities and have comfortable, safe lives, they don't often die. So they can't be the ones to travel. So that creates this sort of underclass of people who live out in the Badlands, who are much likely to have dangerous lives and to be dead in other universes. And they're the ones that can jump between the worlds and can bring back things and information and things, you know, that the upper classes can then exploit. So the protagonist is dead on something like 370 of the possible Earths you can go to. So she is very in demand. But then things start to get really weird because one of the last remaining versions of her also dies, and that sort of spins out the whole story. You know, I'm a world-building junkie, as we've established, and this is a really interesting world. It, you know, it reminds me a little bit of sort of the work of N.K. Jemisin in that it is a powerful social commentary, but it's couched in this killer story with lots of action and characters that you really care about.
And you're exploring these themes like privilege and belonging in this you know, setting.
Mm-hmm, exactly, and exploitation, and yeah, it's a great read.
And just juxtaposed as we sit now in a pandemic as well, I'm sure it sits differently right now in a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly makes you think about, especially me sitting home in my little walled citadel here. I'm safe, I'm comfortable. It makes me think, you know, there are definitely people out there that are risking their lives every day to keep me comfortable. And it's I've said punch in the feels already today, but this again, it's a real punch in the feels.
We're getting a list of book recommendations from NPR's Petra Mayer. She's our guide to the books that made an impression on her and her colleagues last year. What book surprised you, or one you just couldn't put down? What kind of recommendation would you like based on your tastes? Did you reread a book in 2020? What one did you go back to and why? Be part of this book hour, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Petra Mayer after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're in the book world here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And like so many industries, COVID upended publishing. Publishers Weekly took stock, summing up the year this way. Online sales soared, ebooks rebounded, and digital audiobooks continued their double-digit growth. But how is your local indie bookstore doing? Where do you get your books from? Where do you find recommendations? Have you checked out the NPR Book Concierge? What did you find? 800-642-1234. NPR Books editor Petra Mayer is one of the creators with nearly 400 books from the past year, and she's here with her favorite titles. Let's bring in Mary Lisa joining us from Shano. Hi, Mary Lisa. What are you reading?
Oh, hello. I just finished Homegoing by Yaa Gyasir.
What did you think of Homegoing?
It was fantastic and so deeply insightful and, you know, the story weaving, you know, the story of these two sisters and seven generations of impact of captivity, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement happening and such a lack of understanding of the history of racism in our country. This book was really, it was just thought-provoking and deeply insightful.
Yeah, Mary Lisa, thank you for that. Homegoing, Petra, from 2016 resonated with Mary Lisa, especially at this moment.
Yeah, and I also want to say Yaa Gyasir has a new book out last year, which is in the Concierge, called Transcendent Kingdom. It is not historical. It's about a Ghanaian-American scientist at Stanford who's studying mouse behavior, but what she really wants to understand is humans. And it's sort of how she's balancing her scientific studies with her, you know, she's being drawn to the evangelical faith that she grew up in, and she's trying to reconcile all of that. And sorry, the yelling you hear in the background is my cat.
No, we love kitty cats. Carry on.
But I will say, if Mary Lisa goes to the Concierge and clicks on the Seriously Great Writing tab, one of the books in that tab is Transcendent Kingdom, and it's got links to a lot of interviews that Yaa Gyasir has done over the years, not just with NPR, but with member stations. So she can check out a lot of really cool stuff there.
Thanks. I want to tell you where I shop.
Go ahead, Mary Lisa. Yeah.
Okay. I shop at this great store in Green Bay called Lion's Mouth Bookstore.
Oh, a local bookstore. That's wonderful. How are they doing?
Well, I think they're very busy. They have a lot of, it's wonderful because you can do online orders as well. So you can order online. You know, this year it's been great to order and then go pick up.
Mary Lisa, thank you for sharing that. Let's bring in, Aaron in Menominee Falls. Hi, Aaron. What have you reread?
The Hidden Habits of Genius by Craig Wright. You guys actually recommended that book, and I believe had him on the air.
We did.
It really gives a great look of also the social inequalities we have with people of color. Well, and it kind of goes in depth and explains, you know, what a genius is and why it's good and not so good to have a genius. But I just thought that was a great reading. I would recommend it to you.
Aaron, thank you for that. The Hidden Habits of Genius, Beyond Talent, IQ, and Grit is the title, Unlocking the Secrets of Greatness. That's by Craig Wright. And something, Petra, that Aaron has reread.
Yeah, rereading is such a comfort. This is funny. It made me think of being a little kid and going to our local kids bookstore in Washington, D.C. called The Cheshire Cat. It's no longer there, but it was a great resource when I was a kid. And my mom would always say to me, why do you want to buy that? You've already read it. That's the point. I want to buy it because I've read it and I know it's good. And I love, you know, especially now when people need comfort, rereading is a great thing to do. I'm about to go and reread my personal favorite comfort reads, which are the historical novels of Judith Merkle Riley. Mm. And if you are not familiar with those, I highly recommend them. There's five or six of them, I think, and they're all historicals, and they all have amazing female characters. My favorite one is called The Serpent Garden. It's about a miniatures painter at the court of Henry VIII in the service of Cardinal Wolsey. And she gets involved in international intrigue. And she's a really great painter. So it's competence porn and a really good historical novel.
Well, let's look a little bit further with women here. And there's The Care and Feeding of Waspish Widows by Olivia Waite. What did you see in this?
Oh, well, this is so good. Romance right now is in the public consciousness, I think, because of Bridgerton, right? So mm-hmm. people are wondering about romance and kind of interested in the genre. This is a great place to start. So this is also, it's set in 1820, which is just as the Regency is ending, right? So it's a little bit after Bridgerton. And it's this lovely queer romance between two older women. One of them is a print shop owner and one of them is a beekeeper. So if you think, romance, it's just about dukes and rich people, these are real ordinary people. And one of the things I like about it, it's gorgeously written too, and the relationship is wonderfully compelling and hot also. That is part of why we read romance. But I like books, historical novels, where I learn something about what's going on in that world. And one of the things that we think about, you know, the Regency, we think about Jane Austen, we think about Elizabeth and Darcy. Right now we think about Daphne and the Duke of Hastings, and it's this lovely world of, you know, empire-waisted dresses and high-wheeled curricles and duels and lots of tea. But actually, there was all this historical upheaval going on then. And that figures in The Care and Feeding of Waspish Widows, because one of the heroines is a print shop owner, and so she has to deal with printing satirical cartoons about what's going on at the time, which, by the way, is George IV, who's just become king, and he's trying to divorce his wife because he hated her. And it became this huge, huge controversy, and that is reflected in the book. So I love it because it's beautifully written, it's compelling, these people are real, and you will learn something about what's going on in that world.
So it kind of has something there for everyone in terms of what you can take away from the book. Petra Mayer, an editor at NPR Books with us, focusing on fiction, particularly genre fiction that she appreciates. Hearing about books that you have read recently or this year and what you're reading now, 800-642-1234. George is with us from Monroe. Hi, George. What are you reading?
Hey, good morning. Well, timely, a month or so ago, I picked Albert Camus' The Plague off the shelf. He wrote it in post-war time, the 40s, I guess. It's set in Oran, a city in Algeria, and it's essentially about a fictionalized account of 1 year from the onset of a plague through till the end. And the main character is a doctor treating people, but there's a priest, there's his associates and friends, and a deceptively simple text. You never see a word you don't know, and the sentences are short, but very, very, very deep. Wonderful book.
George, thank you for that. A French philosopher there, Petra.
Yeah, this is where I have to cop to not having read the blank. It's embarrassing, but I will admit it. But I will say there's a really interesting book by an Algerian novelist called Kamel Daoud that came out maybe 5 years ago called The Meursault Investigation. And it is a response to The Stranger, also by Camus. So if our listener wants to explore some more in that world, I would recommend this book.
Looking at the book Ring Shout is another one you wanted to bring into our conversation here. It's by P. Jelly Clark. What did you take away from this book?
This is a really powerful book. It's a novella, but it packs a punch. Again, this might be something for people who are, you know, influenced by all the events that went on this summer with the Black Lives Matter movement. So this is a historical novel. It's set in an alternate version of Macon, Georgia in the 1920s. And the idea is, what if the Ku Klux Klan were actually pointy-headed white demons from another dimension, and they're here to sort of feast on our hatred and our anger? And what has actually brought them here is the movie Birth of a Nation, you know, which is infamous now for how atrociously racist it is. And in this world, it's the catalyst that has brought the demons here. And fighting them, we have this group of women led by a woman named Maurice. And she, you know, she and her compatriots fight these demons, you know, with bombs and guns and knives, but also a supernatural power. They have a woman named Nana Jean, who's an old Gullah woman, and she leads these ring shouts, which are chants and that help put power behind the work Maurice and her compatriots do. And she, Maurice herself, has her own kind of painful history that powers what she does. And that is of an important point in the book, because what is driving her is her own hatred and anger. And she has to figure out how to use it, how to come to terms with it, how to not let it drag her down to the level of the demons. And so, you know, there's a lot of painful and difficult stuff in the book, but it's also kind of a, you know, an ensemble cast, an action novel. You know, she has her compatriot Sadie, the loudmouth sharpshooter, and Chef, who is a veteran and she fought with the Harlem Hellfighters in World War One. And they're great. You know, there's this snappy banter and all this action. So it's a real great mix of things.
Our guide to the best reads over the past year is NPR's Petra Mayer. She's an editor at NPR Books. What is the stack like on your nightstand, may I ask, in 2021? Do you need Petra to help you prioritize what to read next? What's your favorite book genre? Are you into audiobooks? What book are you listening to now? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Petra Mayer here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about books with NPR Books editor Petra Mayer. One of the incredible things about hosting this show is I get to devour books. We usually have one or two new books to talk about every week here. And I find it so exciting and challenging to have such a wide range of authors and their works. In 2020, the book that was most illuminating for me was Leila Lalami's Conditional Citizens on Belonging in America, making me see green card holders, making me see citizenship in a whole new light. What was your best book of 2020? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Petra Mayer is with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Eddie now in Viroqua. Hi, Eddie. What would you like to add? Hi.
How are you?
Good.
So I read a really wonderful book. It's a local book. It's written by a woman named K.D. Albaugh, and it's called Face Down in Rising Sun. And it's a fictional account of the Clara Olson murders, which happened back in the 1920s down here in Vernon, Crawford County. And it's just a beautifully written book. There's a lot of books written about this murder, but this one really delves into the intricacies of the time period and really tries to reconstruct how this all happened. I'd also like to mention I have a bookstore in Viroqua, and there's an online shop called bookshop.org, which is an alternative to Amazon that I'd love to have your listeners check out. It supports local bookshops, and it's a great site.
Eddie, did reading Face Down in Rising Sun make you see perhaps your community in a new light, since it is a local read?
Yeah, it really did, because it opened the doors to what life was like just down the road 100 years ago. So, you know, she explained the tobacco farming really, really well, which is something that was a huge part of this area, but has almost disappeared completely. Our bookstore is in an old tobacco warehouse, so it's a big part of our sort of mythology of the building.
Eddie, thank you for bringing that. Petra, what about bookshop.org?
First, I just want to say that Face Down and Rising Sun sounds great, and I just went online and ordered it.
Oh, good.
I don't have that much to add about bookshop.org. It is an alternative to Amazon that focuses on independent bookshops, so that is also a great place where you can order things. But honestly, I stay away from the commercial side of things. I wish I could be more used.
Eddie, thank you. Cynthia now in Menominee. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello. At the beginning of the pandemic, the owner of our local bookshop, Bookends on Main, sent out in a newsletter recommending books to read relevant to the pandemic. And I fell in love with the author, Geraldine Brooks, and her A Year of Wonder, a story of the plague set in the medieval ages, the European plague. I've moved on to read People of the Book, and the one I just finished was The Secret Chord by Geraldine Brooks. But there are so many relevant comments and stories in A Year of Wonder. I think it's a must read.
Cynthia, thank you. So Cynthia really having an impression here on Geraldine Brooks.
Yeah, and I would also say that if she doesn't mind a little bit of sci-fi, another book that is absolutely great, especially this year, is Doomsday Book by Connie Willis. Connie Willis is a very well-known science fiction author who writes about time-traveling historians. But Doomsday Book is set dually in kind of the future and during the during the Black Plague, and in the future where the historians are traveling from, there is also a terrible pandemic happening. And it's about how these parallel timelines, you know, one historian is set adrift in the past during the Black Plague. She can't get home because the pandemic is disrupting the present. And she has to sort of come to terms with make a life and try to navigate her way through everything that's going on as she's trapped in 1347, and she, you know, makes very powerful bonds with the villagers, and she, you know, gets involved with nursing the sick, and they try to support each other through this terrible ordeal. And it has a lot to say about the world now. So if you don't mind a little bit of sci-fi, I would recommend checking out The Doomsday Book by Connie Willis.
Cynthia, thank you for the call. You know, we've been dabbling, Petra, in romances here and there this hour. What about Take a Hint, Danny Brown?
Heck yeah. I would say that everybody needs to be reading romance now, because one of the things that is absolutely rock solid about romance is that they always have a happy ending. So it's a little bit like riding a roller coaster, right? You're going to get shaken all around, but you're going to come home safe. So, you know, and sometimes that's what you need. So Take a Hint, Danny Brown is part of a series. It's the middle book, but you don't need to have read the first one. If you did watch Bridgerton, the trope there will be very familiar to you. It is about a faked relationship. Danny Brown is one of three sisters. They are Black British women, each very accomplished. She is a real hard-charging academic who, you know, she just broke up with her long-term girlfriend. She's done with love. She doesn't care. And so she completely ignores the fact that the extremely hunky campus security guard who brings her tea every day has a giant crush on her. And his name is Zafir Ansari. He's a former rugby star who gave it all up because he had this family tragedy and he couldn't deal with the publicity that came with that. And now all he really wants to do is work on this kids sports charity that he founded. And so I'm not going to give away the whole plot, but basically, they end up deciding that they end up becoming a meme accidentally, and then they decide to make it real and kind of fake a relationship to get good publicity for his kids' sports charity. And of course, when that happens, you know, that it's going to become a real relationship. And it's delightful. It's just such a good book.
Well, here we are closing in on midwinter. And one of the authors we've had on recently is Catherine May in her book, Wintering: The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. This is one on your list as well. What did you see?
I mean, this is probably the most appropriate book you could possibly read right now. I mean, not only are we in the middle of actual physical winter, but also we're sort of in the middle of a social, political, cultural winter. And so her premise, I guess if you've interviewed her, you know this, is that we spend our lives kind of trying to deny and to avoid bad times. And that when bad times come to us, we treat them as personal failures and not just something that happens to everyone, right? And so she defines wintering as kind of the active acceptance of sadness, that you accept that these things happen, that they happen to everyone, that they are not your fault, and that wintering means you kind of lean into it, you accept it, you find out what you can do about it and inside it, and you come out the other side, and maybe you have some wisdom that you can pass on to people who are about to go into their own winters. I mean, it's also about like actual winter, because she talks about how she loves cold places and she seeks them out when she's upset or depressed. You know, there's a sequence where she goes to see the Northern Lights, or she's organized a group of people to take polar bear swims in the ocean because she lives right at the seaside. And so it's actually also just a sort of meditation on the pleasures of winter and cold. It's a great book, for especially right now.
Well, you know, it's not self-help, and yet we can take away so much for our lives and at this moment. And, you know, I think that's an important thing to look at as well, is that so many of the books we do read are applicable to what we're going through or trying to reckon with in our own lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also the thing that was particularly powerful to me about wintering is her idea that once you have come through your own winter, then you can reach out to other people and help them with whatever you've learned. So it's not just that we're working on ourselves, it's that we are reaching out and helping those around us who may be going through the same thing. You know, this whole part of the book where she talks about this sort of what a revelation it was to her to realize that when she was going through difficult times, there were other people that were having exactly the same problem and that they were willing to help her, and that that was just this amazing sunrise in her life.
I wonder, you know, what does your nightstand look like? How many stacks of books do you have piled up next to you?
Like 3 or 4. I mean, and then my Kindle's on top of it, and when I bump into it, it falls over. It's bad. I have so much stuff stacked up.
Do you read multiple books at once?
When it's not a pandemic year, I can. This year, I did say that I was suddenly able to read again and that I've been reading a lot, but it is, I got to say, it's hard for me to multitask right now. In a non-pandemic year, yeah, I have 3 or 4 books going at once. Not right now.
Do you have any suggestions if we're trying to figure out what is that next book to pick up? What should we try to do?
You know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say go to npr.org/bestbooks. That is the book concierge. And as you mentioned, it has a visual matrix of 383 books this year. And it has a bunch of tags. And the tags are really what I'm recommending because, you know, if you just think, oh, I want something funny, or oh, my book club needs something, or I want a sci-fi story, or I want something that stars a woman, we have tags for all of that. So if you only have the vaguest idea of what you want, go to the book concierge. We can help you out. Or, you know, hit me up on Twitter. I'm NPR Books. I'll help you if I can.
Petra, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. It was wonderful.
Petra Mayer is an editor at NPR Books, focusing on fiction, particularly genre fiction. As she said, her and her colleagues designed the NPR Book Concierge. Check it out. We have a link, wpr.org/mornings, and this is the Ideas Network.